Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We got a fun episode lined up. We're going to start off with a bunch of people here co-hosting with me today. Jacob's here. How are you?
I'm alive.
No one cares. Aki's here. How are you?
Alive.
No one cares. Brooke, how are you?
I'm really good. It's a big day.
Shut up. Hold on. Shut up for a second. How is the bun?
Yes.
She's really good. That's thank brisket. You so much.
That is the actual important news of this podcast.
You need to post more pictures in the
fuck, yeah, shirt. Fuck the interview. Fuck the review.
Oh, hey.
Goodness.
No. We need bun watch. That is it.
Okay. I'm getting a ring cam. We're going to have 24/7 eyes on this little sucker soon.
Hell yes.
Really? I see the abyss.
You need it.
Of my gaping butthole. I'm a new bunny mom. Sorry that we're making it all about my parenthood journey here. This is my first child. My very first biological child. Anyway, back to y'all. We're so excited to have you.
The triumvirate here over at the deep end, one of the Gardner trio, is a big bun mom. Mm-hmm. And that's Lindsay. She's not here right now, but like we're bun auntie and uncle here. So we're fans. We enjoy the money.
Wow. I was already a little nervous to meet you guys. Now I'm like sweating. So it's become too cool all of a sudden. I don't know why.
I did actually see on your Twitter feed a few of the pictures, and I pointed out to Amanda. I was like, we got to tell Lindsay.
Yeah. Lindsay will be really excited. All I know being a bunny auntie is they have delicate digestive system. That's the only thing I've heard.
Yeah. Dude, it's so scary. Their digestion's a little too sensitive. Don't even get me.
Like, they're precious babes, so...
They're too precious. He's doing a thing right now where he likes to eat his own poop, which is normal for them. But right after he does, though, he'll come up to my face and he really wants to lick my face. And if I don't let him, he gets mad. He digs at me. Anyway, see me after the interview. I can give you more details, pictures.
Pictures of the bunny eating poo and then going up to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah. I want to pitch an idea I have for my cat. It's called Only Paws. We should talk about
it. I should mention that guests are here. Lady McGree is here. Bree, how are you?
All right. How is everybody else?
We're doing wonderful because we have two actual guests on the show. Amanda and Bill Gardner returning to the show from the Deep End Games. How are you two doing?
I'm an actual guest. That's so exciting. I don't think I've been an actual anything in my life. So yay.
Hospitality here is just unmatched. Thank you. Thank you so much.
We got smelly bunny breath. We've got all sorts of excitement.
Things are great. Thanks.
She's got the bunnies. I've got the kitties.
Ooh.
How many kitties?
How many kitties do you have?
Right now, officially indoor, we're at 14.
Oh, what the fuck? No, you didn't get more, did you?
No, I said indoor. We're at 14.
Officially. You said officially. Yeah. What does unofficially mean? Oh. Damn it,
there's
Joe.
There's a bunch of outdoor cats who just hang out on our porch.
How many of those? Are we now up to 20?
No.
Is this okay. Like a cat harem? Like, what's
it
happening?
It is. It's a long story.
Ew. Passion, I love it.
They add up and we figure, hey, they're gonna get old and die soon, and they don't die. They're just living forever.
That's because they're surrounded by love.
Yeah, we got immortal cats. Yeah. I think Piddles is going on 13. So she's up there.
Wow.
She looks good. She looks damn good for her age.
Yeah, she's still moving around young. She's probably gonna live till 20. She's gonna outlive me. Well.
Oh God, yeah, Piddles probably is 13, 12 or 13, because yeah, I've known you since 2009. So yeah.
There must be like a one that you just want to like accidentally not let in.
Oh, right? Honestly, yes, there is one. And it's
the point of the butt
because he pees on things.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh,
like
those guys,
like an animal.
The back door he'll pee on. He'll pee on the couch. Like, we have pee pads everywhere just to protect our shit because of Punk. But, oh, well.
That is a very Punk thing to do, yeah, to be honest.
He's a dickhead.
Yeah, very Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes.
I had a cat who earned his own bathroom for that reason.
Ooh. Oh,
for real?
Yeah, he was posh. Yeah, he had his own food, his own litter box, his own tile floor to pee on that I didn't care about. It was grand.
Wow.
It's a nicer setup than most of us have.
I know, right?
I could use a tile floor.
Is this the cat we're seeing in the picture? Is it the same kitty cat we see?
Mm-mm.
Oh. Well,
no, these good. Two cats are precious angels.
You have what, two, Bree?
I have two right now, yes. I've had up to four at a time in the past, but
Rookie numbers, gotcha.
Yeah, I know. I mean, if we count the outdoor cats, I am almost close to you.
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, we were happy with five. Like, we were good there. And then we got dumped with three of them. We were going to take one, and then two were supposed to go to, like, one to my mom, one to one of Ashley's coworkers, and that just never happened. So we went up to eight. And then we moved, and we found one at my niece's birthday party, just a stray out in a parking lot. And we couldn't just leave him there. Didn't want him.
You really could.
I mean, we could have, but his actual owner, we tried finding the owner, and his actual owner was a negligent dickbag who just didn't feed the pets, didn't take care of the pets. So we kidnapped him.
Oh, that's
Pickle.
Like,
yeah.
That sounds like my
Wait,
neighbors.
So is Pickle actually like chipped for this person or no?
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
No, he didn't give a shit about the cats. He's negligent. He's a jerkbag. He just throws food out the backyard and then ignores them. I don't know. Anyway, we got Mama. She showed up and had kittens on our back porch. Like right at the beginning of winter, and we didn't want to leave them outdoor to die, so we brought them in and tried to find them homes, and that never happened. So
that was a power move.
Yeah.
We have no pets, but we have four children, which is a lot.
That is
a lot of children.
That is a lot. So that's like 25 pets.
It's so many children at once. Yeah.
So there was a lot of romance in your household, yes?
Oh my god, during the development of romance of Perception, we had two babies within 13 months. It was so hard. Work from home.
Jeez. You know. So yes, romance is the subject of the night. You were here to chat about your game Romancevania. You were on to chat about it a while ago. It is now nearing release. Give us all the details on this. For the people who don't know what the game is, pitch it to us, sell it to us. What's going on with it?
So, The Bachelor, but make it Dracula, basically.
Full send.
Yeah, Romancevania is exactly what it sounds like. Bill?
We call it a mashup because I can't pick a flavor. I have to include everything that I love. And that's exactly what you'll see here is that, you know, my career, I've been lucky enough I've been making games for about 20 years and, I hate saying that, but yeah, so I've been lucky enough to work on some great projects but generally speaking, they've all been, first person. And I've always wanted to work on a third person game, but specifically in an action platformer. I don't want to say Metroidvania because I think that style of game is very specific. And, I think there are certain expectations that is going to, you're going to be sitting there sort of pixel perfect, trying to uncover the map and that kind of stuff. And I love that. I like Symphony of the Night was obviously a huge inspiration here, but, I really, what we're trying to do here is the old saying about the same, but different, right? The secret sauce here is that we're both thematically and from a game design perspective and every aspect of the game is really about, we're trying to do our own thing, but we're also trying to write as many love letters as we can.
We're inspired.
Yeah. And mash it all up into something that's just cohesive and new and exciting and weird. And it's just like, I can't believe we pulled this damn thing off because this game should not exist. It's tough. Like Amanda, when she talks about, you know, imagine if Dracula was the star of the Bachelor, that's about as clear as we can get, because when you start getting into the nitty gritty of this thing, and you're talking about throwing around boomerangs, and you talk about fighting giant spaghetti monsters, and
the octopus.
The wild cast of characters that we have. And it's just like, first of all, just mashing up the idea of a Metroidvania and a dating sim is I think pretty bold, but the lengths we went to.
Where did you get to that combination? What made you think of those two genres? Like, you know what? You know what these Metroidvanias need? They need more romance and kissing. And
so,
I'd say that about everything. I'll be eating spaghetti, be like, you know what this needs? More
kissing. Hence the four kids. Yeah. Exactly.
Don't make this about me, Bill.
So there's a lot of different pieces here. Like so there's a very clear moment that I can point to where just like the sort of germ popped in my head about like what the sort of genesis of Romancevania. But everything that I work on, I do like to mash up. Like I said, I can't pick a lane. It's got to be all these different things because there's just too many cool things out there. And in this particular case, I'd always wanted to work on a Metroidvania style game, you know, a action platformer, but I've always felt like as much as I love them, I love particularly the immersion and the atmosphere. And you look at Symphony of the Night, I'm constantly walking around in that world in my head, and the combat is impeccable. The you know, every part of that game is about as perfect as it gets. To me, it's about as close as you can get to a perfect game. But I've always felt, despite that they've left a little something on the playing field. And really what that comes down to is a sort of narrative that there's clear world building there, and there's very clearly a story, and it's very straightforward, and it's great. It doesn't get in the way of anything, but I've always wanted more. I've always wanted to be like, you know, tell me more about, Maria, tell me more about these characters, and like being able to talk to them in greater detail and possibly even, you know, maybe get a little bit romantic with them. And a lot of that comes from our love of the BioWare games, right?
Yeah. So, I really love Mass Effect and Dragon Age, and the way my sort of play style is, I will blast through the gameplay and the missions so that I can spend all of my time in the hub world romancing Garrus. I mean, everyone. That's how we do over here. And so when we were making Romancevania, I was adamant, like, so player choice is really big for us. So Bill and I talked extensively about, like, okay, different play styles. Like, some people play like me, where you want to have every conversation with every person you can possibly have. But then there are the people who are like, yeah, whatever, blast through the conversations to get to the gameplay. So Dracula's castle, like his party castle hub world, is really where you can go to the bar with characters and just sit there and have drinks with them. You can go on little dates in their rooms. You can kind of like pursue the characters you're interested in pursuing. But also, you know, you can go out into the world and do the actual action platforming as well. But for me, I mean, I'm a writer. I write romance. I write urban fantasy. I wrote 500 pages of script for Romancevania because I wanted
my God.
It's That's just amazing. Ridiculous. I'm a sicko.
As the romance person, I have a question for you. That's very important for me.
Oh, great.
Oh, my. Great.
Fire away.
Yes.
Have you guys written a, what's the term? A harem ending for this by any chance?
No. So ultimately, because this is a reality dating show, you ultimately have to eliminate people and pick one. But that's kind of the fun of the replay of the game, is you could sort of see the different endings and see the way it plays out with Drac and multiple people. But I am a big advocate for fanfic. So if anybody wants to write some harem fanfic, like, I will be reading it. But we didn't happen to do a harem ending. So,
you know, I'm a little, if I can be honest, I'm a little embarrassed to say that we didn't even really consider that.
Yeah.
And I think it's because we were so like, we definitely have some DLC. Very clear.
It's like, all I can think of is every time I watch that, I'm just like, I really want the genie girl, but there's also Medusa,
the pumpkin girl.
And I'm just like,
well, that was actually a core pillar of ours, is playability.
Yeah.
And Amanda mentioned meaningful choice. And we really stress this quite a bit. I mean, this is like, this is what I'm saying. We were a bit out of our minds making this game because it's
500 pages.
It's one thing to combine these genres, but then to have 12 characters that you can date that all have these incredibly in-depth, you know, fully thought out backstories and their own sort of dramas, their own needs, their own wants, their own interactions with other characters. We have these things called house dramas where as you're walking around the world, occasionally you'll be like, oh, there's something going down in the mansion, and you'll get these little scuffles. These two characters will be going at it, and you have to choose which one you want to side with to get like bonus points and that sort of win over a little bit more favor. So we've got these characters, and as Amanda mentioned, this is a reality dating show, so you vote people off. And I'm sure you can imagine what that does for replay, right? Like every character has a ton of dates and a ton of conversations. And it's like, it's so far, but we set out to build this game. I was like, hey, it'd be awesome if we could do this. And we hit on well beyond what I had in my wildest dreams. Mm-hmm. The harem thing was not something we set out to do. And I think, again, because of the very clear boundaries we had set, but you're going to want to replay this. There's so much to see. There's so many secrets.
And we're not even touching on the friendships. So not only did we write a romance for every character, you can just talk to them in friendly ways. Like, for example, I wrote Fenton the werewolf to be pretty much my best friend. Like, you can romance Fenton. He can get really, really sexy. But I just want to talk about cheese and books with Fenton. And that's what's great awesome about this game is I've learned that a lot of people playing these games really value friendship. And so you do not have to romance everybody. You can be somebody's ride or die without, you know, taking that next step.
I love that. As a big romance fan, like, I really love that stuff too. I'm really impressed by a game we're reviewing next week that provides options like that. So,
cool.
Much appreciated from the man. It is Twice Reborn, a vampire visual novel.
Oh, nice. We'll have to check that out.
I'm just all over the place. Yeah, I really love kissing vampires. That's why I'm here.
I mean, God,
I have a quick question for y'all that's not related to my very storied history with lots and lots of visual novels. You mentioned that you like Garrus from Mass Effect. Amanda, who are you picking the Dragon Age? Who's your Dragon Age choice? I want to know Origins 2, Inquisition, whatever.
Oh, all my of them. God. So I love Morrigan. She's so hot.
Love her.
I'm actually giving a talk at PAX East, Ludonarricon, and a Neriscope called Trust, Lust, and Ust, Writing Effective Romance. And one of my sections is about Morrigan, because she really flips the genre of, like, it takes forever to sleep with her. And then, you know, you get a fade to black, and it's like, no, she wants to sleep with you, but for nefarious reasons. And I think that that's an interesting trope. Hmm. Yeah, so I'm super hot for Morrigan. She's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. I agree wholeheartedly.
She's an amazing character.
Nice.
Speaking of characters, Carnage mentioned that the game has almost as many characters as I have cats. And then previously, he said with all this cat talk, you should do Roman Catvania, which I thought was terrible because Catsylvania is right there.
Oh, that's so much better. Ooh. As the resident pun master, I would go with Catsylvania. So, like, I really hope that you guys will continue being our friends, but we're more dog people. Like, we would go with, like a Corg Sylvania. Like, we love Welsh corgis.
Corgis are alive.
I know a few weeks, few months ago, there was some talk amongst our group of friends that you should have went with Kissylvania.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
I mean, that was we're going for a lot of sequels and DLC, man. So, Kissylvania, it's not out of the realm of
hell. Yeah,
we've definitely joked about a lot of spinoffs and things like that. And like, I mean, that's how this started. Was I just threw out the name to Amanda. I was like, Romancylvania, and she's like, Yep.
Please let's drop what we're working on and work on this.
So what I'm hearing is there could be a DLC where you get to date multiple people.
So listen, my dream is to, as we've gotten into this has just been a dream project for me. I've been lucky, again, I've worked on so many great games, but for me, this has by far been the most challenging, but it's also by far been the most fun and rewarding. Like, we took on way more than we should have. And I'm used to that. Again, I worked on, I worked on Bioshock. But, you know, working on Bioshock, that was an example of a team that was, like, hitting way outside its weight class. Like, we were going up against, you know, Assassin's Creed, which is, like, I was, like, a 200-300 person team. And we were, like, 50 dudes. Dudes and chicks, of course, but all working out of like a terrible closet in Quincy, Mass. And it was just like, what are we doing here? Like, you know, and so we just had, you know, everything was stacked against us, but somehow we managed to just absolutely knock it out. We're very much used to that. And frankly, I'm not really comfortable unless I'm uncomfortable. I don't want to just do the safe thing. Like, I could always go and do like a straight up shooter or whatever. Like, I really enjoyed the most straightforward game I ever worked on was with that team on SWAT 4. And that was a hell of a lot of fun because it was my first real gig, first real design gig. And it was a very clear template there that we could basically just put our own stank on it. You know, we basically took the SWAT 3 formula and we just made it like really gritty, really like sort of David Fincher, and tried to imbue as much narrative as we could in a world where it's just like, okay, well, what do you do with a bunch of barricaded suspects? Like, how do you make that interesting? And just really making it into, you know, our own narrative spin. And so that taught me early on to just, you know, really stretch, to try and push the boundaries, try and find a way to mark, the game with your own, your sort of, like I said, stank. Speaking of cats,
Stankylvania.
There you go. Yeah,
that's the DLC I want.
Yeah,
gotta steal some of these ideas.
Yeah,
they're all yours. Oh man, so how did the Kickstarter go for it? I know that was a while ago. I was one of the backers. You got some money out of me for it. So how did that go? How did the reward tiers go? Did anybody splurge for any of the crazy stuff that you had?
So do you want the PR answer or do you want the honest answer?
They're honest. Friends. Let's give them the real answer.
I mean, that was brutal. I think it took years off our life.
Oh my God, yeah.
Ooh.
We had such a great experience with Perception and that Kickstarter. Very different time. We didn't realize how much things had changed in the span of, a couple of years, or, you know, 3 or 4 years, whatever it was. But it was, in a lot of ways, pretty soul-crushing early on. And, you know, we came out with this thing where we were just like, again, it was our baby. Like, we knew what we were trying to do, and the seeds were there. We didn't have our message refined. We had a very, very different reaction from sort of, I think, the masses. Like, I think that the people who pledged early on got it, even though our message was way off and the content we were showing was way off. And it was like way too early. And I hate showing stuff off when it's not ready, but you have to do it. And it's very kind of humiliating, honestly. So we went out there and we got some initial good reaction, but then we started to get to like, what the hell is this reaction? And a lot of like, and we hadn't refined our message. Mm-hmm. We didn't have enough stuff that was at the level of quality that we wanted to, and sort of where we wound up. And, you know, frankly, it was like a few days into the project when we had all these plans to get like, in order for Kickstarter to work, you really have to get the right kind of marketing support, the right kind of, there's a science to it.
The right momentum. You have to have the right amount of people at the right amount of time.
And so we didn't know about how the game had changed and how, frankly, it had been gamified a bit. Like, people had really gamed the system to a degree with Kickstarter. And like 2 or 3 days in, we got, I finally got a return call from this company who specializes in the kind of marketing and outreach and this kind of thing. And they told us like, oh yeah, no, you guys are never going to make it.
Yeah. We were 2 days in.
2 days in. He's like, no, you way too much. That's not how it goes. You're supposed to ask for very little, like way less than you need. And then you smash your goal in the first 24 to 48 hours. And then you're good for there. And I was like, what?
That's disingenuous. We're not going to show off these assets and be like, yeah, we can make this for 10 grand. Like, that's just a lie.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we were being honest roughly with our ask. And, from a gamified perspective, it bit us in the ass. But then towards the end of the campaign,
so we're our backs are against the corner, right? This is less than a week into the thing, and meanwhile, this is there's a lot of stuff going on in the world. You know, so this is kind of coming out of the first terrible wave of COVID. So it was like that summer. But then we had the election, and we had all this noise in the air, and there was a bunch. I can't remember exactly what
it was. Weird time.
It was a terrible time, and you know, we're like, frankly, we sort of limped our way along, and you know, maybe about halfway through, we started releasing more content, and just not getting the traction. Nobody spreads word about games anymore. Anyway, like nobody really touches. Just like, hey, what's the latest controversy? Tell me about that. You know, and so we just weren't getting the hits that we weren't. And I like, we kind of frankly walked away for a little while. We're like, welp, I guess that's it. This sucks.
Damn.
And it was hard, to the point where a few people on the team walked away.
Yeah.
Like, we're not gonna make. And so mortifying. And all I could do was like put my head down and just be like, okay, let's just maybe catch up with my family who have been not neglecting. They're you know, they love what we do, and they participate quite a bit. And you know, we got down to like the last 3 or 4 days, and I just, frankly, a lot of us were like, what is going on? How is this possible? This game is too goddamn good. There's no way we're not going to make this thing. And I got, so actually what it was somebody who I respect a lot sent me like a condolence email being like, hey, so sorry, you know, let me know. And I was like, no fucking way. And I put my head down, and I literally started messaging every goddamn person I knew. And we started putting together plans, and we started coming up with these. Amanda had this great idea. She messaged the backers, be like, hey, if everyone puts in this a little bit more, it's like $5 extra, we're going to make this thing. Pizza. The cost of a pizza. And then we like started like we got into all these secret networks of people who were like, hey, if you want us to plug your game with our game dev friends. And we just started picking up this momentum to the point where Kickstarter, the people are like Luke Crane from Kickstarter, they messaged us. You know, it was like there's like 48 hours left, and they were like, "What are you guys doing right now?
Oh my God.
And they're like, it just picked up this momentum. And if you look at our last 2 days, you do not see curves like this in a Kickstarter.
Yeah, like for sure.
It's unheard of. And they were like, they started actively at Kickstarter headquarters, like they're cheering us on, and like just this momentum, and we made it. And I've never been more grateful. It was the most exhilarating thing. And like I said, this game should not exist, but based on that, I've never been more energized in my entire life. Even when we when I worked on BioShock, and is a little thing we never really talk about, but we broke Xbox Live with our demo on BioShock.
Really?
We had no idea how it was going to do. We had good press, but that was always Irrational's way. Irrational always had amazing press, this critical darling, and the games didn't sell. Right? That was always the way. And we had all the markings were there again, and we're like, we don't know how this is going to go. Fingers crossed. We released this demo on Xbox Live. It was like a week or so before, and everyone was like calling in, cause it was like towards the end of the project, and everyone's kind of taking some time and like, hey, I'm trying to download the demo. What's going on? And people started calling, and we messaged Microsoft, and was like, yeah, we're having problems with the network. And we more or less got confirmation that so many people downloaded it at once, because we had announced when it was coming out that we broke Xbox Live, and we're like, okay, we're going to make
that
it.
We're going to be okay.
So,
dude, this is an inspiring tale.
What was that?
This is nothing short of an inspiring tale.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, yeah, and to use that energy, especially, and that really rocketed us through development. And it was a very difficult development in that we took on so freaking much. We're like, we have to make good on this.
Yeah.
And so, like, I've never crunched like I ever have. Like, personally, I know there's a lot of talk about crunch culture and that sort of thing, and I get that. Nobody on the team besides me, Amanda, Lindsay, and really Brendan, you know, crunch. And it was all like, no, we're doing, because it's just the amount of passion on this thing.
Voluntary.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just like,
yeah.
So sorry. I warned you that I'd rant. I warned you that I'd rant.
Well, I mean, that's what we want. That's like, why we ask.
We love it.
I have another question related to that, actually.
Great.
I know you guys did pass your actual goal because you had stretch goals on there. And I know you at least reached one of them, because it was the one I wanted the most, which was having a female drag.
Yeah.
What all stretch goals did you actually reach?
Well, so funny thing about the female drac body is that we did not reach that goal, but we thought it was so important and people were so jazzed and energized about being able to pick your body that we decided to make it a priority. And we are so glad we did, because she's just fabulous and gorgeous and so much fun to play.
Yeah, that was all me. I was overwhelmed by the amount of outreach that people were like, we want fem drac.
Yeah.
And I'm so encouraged to hear that, because I didn't begrudgingly put it in as a stretch goal, but I was like, I don't think people are going to be into this. And it was so overwhelming that I was like, okay, we have to work around and figure out how to make this happen, because I was dead wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. The moment I saw fem drac, I was like, oh, yes, I want that. Either I want to date that or I want to be that.
Give me one.
And that's one of the cool things. I talked about the replay. Obviously all the different characters you can date. But, you know, another incentive to replay the game is you have a very, they have the same lines, but they delivered so differently. Mm. And it really does feel like a completely different experience when you play as the two Drax. And, Amanda, I mean, like, you know, I don't know, like recording with...
It's a joy. Like, talking about our Drax is a pure joy for me. So I want to start by talking about how we cast our male Drax, which was fascinating and amazing and such a journey. So when we were conceptualizing Drax, we wanted Drax to be pretty much the Elvis of vampires. We wanted Drax to be the sexiest vampire that would drive people insane. Like, I joke about how you look at old footage of girls watching Elvis and they're fucking tearing their faces off, right? Yeah, I was like, we need to have a voice that's going to make the panties drop. So I have a bunch of romance writer friends, and I was like, ladies, who has the sexiest voice ever? And I didn't even mean like voice actors. I was just like, who do you think has a great voice? Like, I kind of wanted to find an anchor. And I'm lucky enough to be friends with E.L. James, who wrote the 50 Shades trilogy. And she said, Zachary Weber. He was our Christian Grey for the audiobooks. And she introduced me to him, and Zach is amazing. He is a god among men. He is the funniest, most hilarious, also has a ridiculously sexy voice. So we cast him. We love him. He's our Drac. He's our Drac Zach. We love him so much. He's just the best. But when it came time to be like, okay, now how do we match this for a woman? It was really also fascinating, because I kept getting all these auditions where the women were trying too hard to be sexy. Like, I'm Dracula. Like, it was like too hard. Like, what's cool about Drac is just very direct, very strong, very effortlessly sexy. So, you know, these auditions were all trying too hard. So I actually went back into the audiobook space. I started listening to some female narrators, and I found this one, Eva Kaminsky. And her voice was just so strong and confident and just really like powerful. And it had a sort of like a resonance, even though she didn't sound like Zach, she had a resonance and a presence that mirrored his. And when we reached out to her, she read some of our lines. We were like, that is it. She's our fem drac. But
it's like a sophisticated quirk.
I was just about to say, she brings a very almost fancy energy to Drac that Zach does not. And so playing the game, she has an air of sophistication about her that like makes it a different experience, even though the lines are the same. So it's kind of amazing. Yeah.
I can't wait to play it. Oh my God. I don't mean to hog the questions too much. I got one more I absolutely have to ask you before. Well, we've talked about that you like BioWare games, and we've talked about how this is also influenced by Symphony of the Night. Are there any other major influences in players that you would consider this a love letter to, specifically in the romance game space?
Well, I am an absolute simp for Persona 5.
Oh my God, I love you so much. Please don't take this the wrong way, that I would die for you.
We're best friends now.
I'm obsessed with you. Please continue.
No, I just, I love everything about it, except that you can't date the dudes.
I feel that.
But I really love the nuance of the dialogue. I really love all the dateable options. I really love the gifting. We have a great gifting system in Romancevania, and I really like them. Yeah. So I would say that the Persona games in general, I also love Persona 4, but
me too. That's my 5
just has that special sauce to it, and I'm heavily inspired by that. But and yeah, definitely the BioWare games. But Bill, would you say?
You know, honestly, so it, when it comes to romance, honestly, it's the same sort of situation with Castlevania. Like I sort of imbue my own story when I'm playing those games, and I love them. But the same thing with like romance. I feel like most games, I'm kind of, you know, I don't know. I guess I'm fanficking in my head.
Yeah,
is the word fanficking.
I mean, headcanon. I guess you could say like your headcanon is so and so and so and so.
Yeah, I just feel like that. And I don't want to sound like I'm knocking anything else, because I love pretty much, I play everything, and I love pretty much all the games that we're talking about here. But I always come away feeling like I wish, you know, maybe it's just the creator in me, but I was like, I wish they could have done it a little differently.
Well, it's unfulfilling in some ways.
Yeah, yeah. And in a lot of ways, this is like, so Amanda in her talks will go into great detail about the different sort of tropes, if you will, the different romance types. And I think this is a way for us to express a lot of that, because I feel like, you know, maybe I'm not analyzing the other games that much, but it feels like they're not quite.
Well, it's because you can't necessarily play them in the style that you want to. So, you know, take Vess, for example, in Romancevania. She is a friends to lovers trope. So she starts off being like, yeah, buddy, it's not going to happen, but like we can be friends. And, you know, if you're persistent but not pushy, if you are, you know, befriending her but like gaining her trust, you know, there's your way to sort of like shoelace yourself into her life, and rather than, you know, letting something like forcing something to happen. So there are different play styles. Some characters you can be really aggressive with, like, I want you. There are other characters where you can, you know, gently tease each other until something happens. And, you know, when you're looking at a single player game, like a linear game, you really have very few options as to how you want to romance. Like, some people are more aggressive than others. Like, and that's like real life.
But I think that the fact that they are such strong archetypes, I think that's one of the key, because I feel like a lot of the romance, like, again, not Persona 5 is god tier, so I'm not at all like knocking it, but I do feel like that stuff is kind of worked in. Obviously that's not the focus of the game, so that makes sense. Like there's so many freaking things that game does, and it does them so well. But I think that the amount of I think weight that each character has, like, so for you mentioned Medusa. You know, their exes, Draken and Medusa, you know, dated, I don't even know how long ago, hundreds of years ago. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so there's a lot of that history there. And they just, I think that sense of place, I talked before about immersion and atmosphere. And I think that, you know, I look at something like Hollow Knight, it's like, oh my God, I'm there. Like, you walk around the world and just the fog and the lighting and the you know, the sort of atmospheric music, and it, you're just there, and you can walk around in your head. But at the same time, there is a history there, but man, oh man, there's so much more opportunity, I feel like. And that's what this is. This is, you know, we're sort of really leaning more into that with the different characters.
Well, we give you so many options of how you can interact with them that it really does feel like you're falling in love. Like, am I going to take her out for a seafood dinner, or am I going to take her to the bar? Am I going to take her into the Alps, or are we going to have a talk in her room? Like, there are just so many ways you can get to know these characters. And you know, I feel like I fall for everyone every time, but I wrote them, so that's you know, that's hard to say. But I did I cannot neglect a very romantic touch point for games with Bill and myself. But Bill and I have been together almost 23 years, which is a really long time.
You can just say a long time.
And So they understand the reference. So when we first started dating, we were a little bit long distance because Bill was spending the semester in Hollywood and I was back in Boston. So we would play Final Fantasy VIII. And we would call each other on the phone, like the actual phone, and talk about the junctioning system and which level we were at and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah. And he had a very squall look. So the couple in that game was Squall and Rinoa. And I happened to, like, have a little bit of a Rinoa vibe to my look. And he had a very Squall vibe to his look. And Squall and Rinoa for us were always this romantic couple that we aspired we kind of fell in love with as we were falling in love with each other. And then fast forward, you know, 18 or so years later, and after three sons, we had a daughter, and we named her Renoa.
So, awesome. That's cool.
That's so cool.
It's a good romance, though.
Yeah.
Do you have a squall there, too?
We don't have a squall. And unfortunately, we don't even call her Renoa. Like, we call her Winnie, which is a whole nother story. But her legal name is Renoa. Although people were like, does that rhyme with quinoa? And we were like, oh, no. No, it doesn't rhyme with quinoa.
Still on the subject of romance, obviously. is there a difference between any of the romances when it comes to which Dracula you choose, or are they all the same?
No, Amanda, so we wanted to make, so Drac is a very clear persona.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to talk about like writing it and how you considered this? And
yeah, I wrote Dracula as a spirit, right? I didn't imagine a body. I was just like, this is what Drac would say. This is what Drac would do. And so when I was writing the lines, there are no pronouns involved. People would just say, oh, Drac likes this, Drac likes that. You know, go ask Drac. And when Zach and Eva read the lines, they just kind of did their own takes. And even though the lines do not differ, the energy does.
Yeah, absolutely.
If that makes sense.
Okay.
Word.
Nice.
That's cool.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how it works.
Yeah.
It was definitely something that we were like, we're confident in it, but we're wondering if it's going to work out. And we I think we were in the, as soon as we were in the studio with Eva, we're like, yeah.
This is. And you know, I don't want to be like, oh, well, this is the sort of thing a woman would say to that. Like, no, like Drac is like, you know, Drac is really confident, and male or female, this is what they would say. You know, I didn't want to be like, oh, I'm going to make this much more feminine. I'm going to make this much more masculine. Like, no, Drac is Drac, and that's what you get.
Well, I think it's a special kind of like deft hand with talent and what you guys are doing, where like you hired an awesome voice actress and you rolled with it and you changed your game a little bit because of the opportunities that presented. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I always talk about Witcher 3 on this show and how it's one of my favorite games of all time. I didn't want to play that game because I was coming off of a bunch of visual novels where I could be a chick. And I was like, this is stupid. And that game, you know, that was a long time ago, but like that game changed my life and showed me how much I love to play a character that's fleshed out. You know, I like projecting, and I like it when the main character is kind of an empty shell I can project onto for all kinds of different dating game fun. But like that's a totally other experience, and it's like a next level of like awesome narrative experience when it's done right. And I'm just getting more and more excited about it the more I hear.
I hope we nail it.
So there's a lot of excitement for the game. Release date was just announced, wasn't it?
Yeah,
March 7th.
March 7th.
So yeah, we so it's cool. Like I said, it's been a wild ride because you know, we've been pouring everything we can into this thing, and you know, we had to go quiet for a while. There were so many moving pieces, and like I said, we're way out of our weight class here. And you know, things started to every game I've ever worked on, it's like, you know, it takes so long for things to come together, and you know, you hit that sort of last sometimes 3 to 6 months, but it's usually just like 3 or 4 months, and like things start to really click.
Mm.
And that was right around when we released the demo for Steam Next Fest in October. And, you know, we were super confident, but you never know how it's going to be received. And we put it out there, and like, we had a bunch of press saying like, this is our favorite Steam Next demo ever. Not even that year. It was like, oh, we've ever played. And we're like, oh no, shoot. What? Wow, I don't know if we can do that. Again, super confident in the thing. And we had a lot of like, so much great feedback from that. We made a ton of tweaks and improvements and that kind of thing. And so I've just never been more confident. Like I said, I was talking about BioShock before. These are obviously very different games, very different caliber and that kind of thing. But, you know, the level of confidence that I have in this, I think is better than it was for BioShock because I know what this is a lot more. It's not nearly as big, and I don't want to overhype here, but this is like incredibly special to me because we pulled off the impossible, and it's just, there's nothing like BioShock at the time. And we kind of take it for granted now because it was like, I remember when we were pitching the thing, we were going around pitching it to publishers, and they're like, Deus Ex didn't sell very well. Why do you want to do that again? System Shock 2 didn't sell. Why do you want to do that again? And we're like, yeah, but you know, RPGs and shooters, they're such a great taste. And like, well, yeah, they always suck though. They don't sell well. And we're like,
oh, God.
No, it's like the amount of pitch horror stories I could tell you. I could fill zombies. A book. Oh yeah, I had one. So we were working on a zombie game for BioShock. Quick tangent here. And so we're really cool. It was before Left 4 Dead. So this was like 2 or 3 years before that. And we're pitching it around, and it was really cool demo. It was like, we basically took the SWAT 4 engine and made it into a zombie game. We actually released some video of this. This is in the public. We did this demo, and we pitched it around, and I'll never forget. I won't say who, but there was one publisher who, after we showed the demo and pitched the whole thing, like, yeah, it's really cool, and we like your team, but we don't think zombies are going to be popular in 2005. And like, I've never seen worse executive decision by anyone in the. That was the worst decision. It was,
that's amazing.
So
it was like,
yeah, so it was like right basically before. This is like shortly after what was the
Dead Rising.
28 days later, so you started to see signs of the new zombie emergence. Like the graphic novel for Walking Dead was out, but the show wasn't, and this kind of thing. So, talk about being wrong.
Well, zombies are out.
Yeah.
All I know is I'm super excited for this game. I really liked Perception. It's the only game that's ever scared me.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Lots of people are like, oh, but jump scares. That's not real. That's not really being scared. That's an automatic function. People just do that. Your game fucking terrified.
Oh!
I'm legally blind. So I was super excited for that game because I'm like, oh, you get to play as someone who's blind. It actually is blind. That's awesome.
Oh, that's amazing. It's great.
I got not very far. I didn't get very far in the game because I got so scared.
Oh, I was just talking about Perception last night, and I didn't even know that you guys were going to be here. So, I was talking about just different games dealing with things like blindness and deafness, and something that could be added to a stealth game in terms of like immersion and accessibility options, and that, you know, the technology there, and that was actually one of the games I was referring to. So yeah,
okay. So we put a tremendous amount of effort. I mean, there's always more stuff I wish we could have done. Like we had a lot of requests about, hey, is there a way to make this game blind accessible? And like we spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to make that work. And I played a bunch of, I don't know if you've heard of this, like it's this game called Shades of Doom, which is they take the Doom engine and they literally make it so that it has no visuals and it's all audio cued and this kind of thing. But it's remarkable. We were making a very different game. It was very story driven. And it was like, I'm glad you found it scary because, you know, a lot of that lives. You must have a really active imagination because a lot of it was we're trying to dance in people's heads there. We're trying to you know, really set the mood and let people's imagination run wild, which is, you know, a key part of what the game was about. It's all about, you know, it's a lot of it is about spatial intelligence, and a lot of it is, I was really experimenting with a lot of different approaches to games, and you know, when it hits with people, it makes me so happy because you know, we always try new things. I think this is you know, Romancevania is much more like we're taking stuff that's a lot more I think gettable, and just like from the get go, like all the different flavors that we're always mashing new stuff up. But in this case, I think it's much more like, oh yeah, cool. I played action platformers,
but it's before. Also ridiculous. I mean, like we joke that we just did not censor ourselves at all writing Romancevania and making Romancevania. Like some of the enemies, you're going to be playing the game and be like, what were they smoking when they came up with this? Like it's insane. The game's insane.
Yeah,
you smoking?
Yeah, that's a great question. What were you smoking?
Nothing illegal.
Yeah, no. We
can you introduce me to your guy?
Yeah, I think one of the we moved on to Romancevania. We really wanted to, you know, spark joy. I know that's a silly phrase, but you know, I think that there's games got serious, you know, and I think there's a lot of funny games out there. A lot of games that are lighthearted, particularly in the indie space. But you know, I think again, there's another area where we're leaving stuff on the playing field, and just to be lighthearted and stupid. We get heavy in a lot of places. There's a lot of heavy
themes. It's got heart, but it's also silly and funny, and it's nuanced. You know, I mean, there's themes, and there's, you know, it's more than just, you know, a bunch of puns, but there are lots of puns.
There's a lot.
We love our puns on SML, especially with Carnage hanging out.
Of us do.
Oh no, you're not a pun fan. You don't like puns?
I'm here for the punishment.
Oh my god. Ooh. You're gonna romance PSL without a doubt.
Was that PSL?
Well, PSL is our kinky pumpkin witch, and she's
my favorite so far. I just want to say, like, I looked at the pictures and I don't just want to smash, I want to squeeze and make sure they're ripe, okay?
Yeah. You gotta check out all angles. But yeah, she makes the most terrible and wonderful puns you'll ever see in a video game, but she's also kinky, so like punishment, I don't know why
that has not crossed my mind,
and so it's just there you go, enjoy
DLC, there you go.
yeah, no, that's one of the fun things is working on this. It's just like things really snowball. It's like if you I wish we had recorded a lot of our, you know, design or narrative discussions where you get into these weird tangents, and like, you know, we're big Arrested Development fans. We always love the puns on that show.
Big fan. Mm-hmm.
And so we just like try and let things run, and someone would just say something, and then you kind of think, okay. Actually, Amanda came home one day with you literally got a PSL.
I'm obsessed with pumpkin spice lattes, and we were just doing like character creation, just spitballing characters. I'm like, PSL, what about just like a pumpkin, like just like a babe made of pumpkins, like a little pumpkin witch. She's like a basic bee. She's a PSL. And we just started laughing. And then we said, okay, well, if she's a scarecrow, like, does she like being up there? Like, oh, well, maybe she's kinky. And it just sort of
spicy. Yeah. And so it was just bizarre the way we didn't censor ourselves, and just like any other, and again, I've worked on quite a few projects, and a lot of times it was like, shut up, that's stupid. You know, like, and I say this lovingly, but this is a stupid game. This is an incredibly stupid game. And we try to run.
Come to the right place.
It's my kind of stuff. Yeah. I'm good for it.
Good.
Yeah, I'm loving what I see so far. March 7th is just around the corner. What platforms is this going to be on?
We're trying to hit all the ones we can. And we have, we're at launch on March 7th, we're Steam, EGS, PS5, and Xbox Series S and X.
Yes!
Yeah, so I remember last time we spoke, we weren't sure if we were going to do it. And like we were able to do it.
We done did it.
So we're also working on the Switch and PS4 for some point. We're juggling a lot. And like I said, we're way outside of our weight class. So we're going to eventually hit those. But, you know, I think we're pretty elated to be able to hit all the sort of next gen, if that's even a phrase people use anymore. go ahead.
Like, I have a random question about like porting stuff. Did the Stadia failing, like, did that mess up anything for you folks? Or like, was there a port planned or being worked on, or?
There was not, actually. So I was so heads down on this thing that I haven't really even had the time to outreach to let alone other devs, but certainly other platforms. We from our Kickstarter, we had a very clear mandate of what we're going to hit.
Yeah.
I would have liked to. I actually had a Stadia, and there was some cool stuff happening there. But, you know, obviously, it's sad to see when any platform goes away. But there's a lot of disruption right now, right? There's a lot of, I'm psyched to see the new VR platforms. But, you know, I think one of the challenges right now as a developer is that there's so many opportunities. You really have to be careful about which battles you pick, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing did my computer just sleep? Sorry, you guys still there?
Yeah, we're still there.
Sorry, my computer.
I was like, oh no, what just happened?
Do you have a power? Sorry about that. As a gamer as well, there's just so many freaking opportunities now, things to spend your time and money on. Mm-hmm. And so we do our best to hit everything we can, because I think, you know, we're trying something so different here, and I want to make sure it hits as many eyes. I want to say, aside from the fact that we want to sell as many copies as we got, but this is different, and we're trying to, you know, I don't want to sound preachy or whatever, but I do feel like that the industry is a little bit stagnant in terms of what's out there. And I think I'm sensing this a lot from the audience as well, where it's just kind of like a lot of frustration, particularly with AAA, right? Where it's just like
a lot of the same. It seems like we're
getting excited people.
Yeah. And so I'm glad you said it. I mean, I don't like to, you know, shit on other, I don't like to shit. I love this industry. Like I've been doing this for so long, and I like, it's my greatest passion. But it does sadden me to see, like, you know, it's like,
Our favorite meme word on the show is unique. because so many games describe themselves as unique with unique yeah. systems and unique enemies. And it, yeah. it's good to see a game that actually is unique and distinct and different instead yep. of more of the
yeah,
same.
Seriously.
Thank you.
Well, that was the goal again. And so, you know, thematically, not to get preachy. I never want to get under a screed or anything like that, but you know, this is very much, one of the themes of the game is about letting go. And I'm like one of the most active retro gamers out there. And I love, like, what was the movie we watched last night?
Not For Resale.
Yeah, Not For Resale. It's a really great documentary about various video game resellers, you know, used game stores. They cover like Pink Gorilla and that kind of thing. And there's one of the stores they cover is a place called Game Zone in Salem. You know, it's right down the road from us. And run by the nicest guys, a guy named Neil, who used to actually sell my father video cassettes back when he owned a video store. So there's a bit of history there. But, you know, I love this stuff. And
what's that on, by the way?
That I don't know if it's streaming anywhere.
I think we rented an
Amazon. I think we were going to, but then we realized we had we bought it from Neil. Yeah, we bought the DVD. Okay, yeah. So I'm actually not sure.
I'll have to look that up. That sounds really interesting to watch.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's a really great, I can't recommend it enough. It was really cool. And it frankly, I got a little teary eyed watching it because I had, I believe in this project so much. I've been collecting games for 35 years. My parents owned the video store, so I had a ton of games from that. I worked at Funko Land, so I bought a ton of games there. But I sold my whole freaking collection for this game. And it was like, watching this thing, and I was like, I sort of put it on my head. I was like, I gotta do this. I believe in this project. I gotta make it happen. And so I got my whole freaking collection, and I sold it. And I don't regret it, but it hit me last night. I was like, oh shit. I was like, looking at these are my people. But at the same time, I was like, what gave me the strength? It was like, this is a game about moving on, about trying new things. And I think when you play it, you'll get that. You know, it's like Grim Reaper's the host of the show. It's no, that's very intentional, right? You have the Grim Reaper telling you to move on, and it's about Drac trying to get his groove back, right? And to put funnily, but it's also, you know, he's getting over his ex. He's been stewing for 100 years. and so you have all these different characters who not only represent the different types of love, but also different ways of moving on. They all have their different perspective on how to become whole again, I guess.
Yeah, everybody's stuck in some way.
Yeah.
You know?
And so we were lovingly saying like, hey, we love this stuff. You know, we're showing all these things, all these homages to a million different games. Like there's a whole sequence, which I won't spoil. It's ripped directly off of Donkey Kong Country, and which is ridiculous, nice. Right? Like I love, it's a great game, but there's one sequence and you play it and you're like, oh, what are you doing? This is so stupid. And there's also
exploding,
like
exploding barrels that you got to time the button.
It's a wrap, really.
Oh God! No.
Okay. Right.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah. So part of this is, again, it's a love letter, but at the same time, it's like, hey, we got to move on. We got to try new things. And as an industry, the industry that I love, I'm watching it sit stagnant, and not entirely. Who the hell am I to say where the industry should go? I'm a nobody.
You're but Bill fucking Gardner. That's who.
But I do see this as a fan and as a creator. That's just like, we gotta be trying new things here. We're not gonna change. Yeah. We're not gonna grow. And so that was a core goal of mine. Sorry to go off on a tangent there. I told you.
I just realized you are BFG. So
there you go.
Oh,
they
man.
Were not giving up on this to game. Our kids, and they were like BFG. Like, what does that mean? And like my kid, my oldest, was like, is that big fucking giant? And we were like, big friendly giant.
Nice.
Such a good movie name. I know we've been chatting for a while. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
I mean, keep your eyes open, share, wish list, stream.
Yeah, we got everything on this thing. And like I said, I can't fathom this not being a runaway success for us. But you never know. And so the more word of mouth we can get, like the reception so far has been overwhelmingly positive. And there's nothing more that I'd like to be able to continue to talk to folks. We're going to PAX in a few weeks. And that is my, awesome. I just cannot wait to get this in front of people and just get the feedback. Like there's so many ideas, just talking to you the energy. That's why I love the Kickstarter. Like I said, that I made the biggest mistake I think I made on this project was not immediately saying like, we need to do Femdrak, you know? And I saw that reception. I was like, whoop, turn the ship around. We're doing that, you know? And like, I don't care what we have to do. It's a lot of work. It was a lot of work to get that done.
Yeah.
But it's so worth it because, you know, people love it. So yeah, for us, it's just about trying to put our best foot forward, get it in front of as many eyes, and like really hopefully spread a bunch of joy with this thing, you know?
Yeah, big time. Big time.
We're going to spread the word.
Thank you.
Yes, yeah, I'm going to go play preach the gospel of Romancemania.
Cool, already on my wish list.
Yeah, it's been on my wish list for a while now.
Oh. Well, I thank you for that. And thank you all for the support. You know, Joe, it's really grateful for the backer support and that kind of thing. So,
yeah, thank you.
But again, we love the feedback. So at any point, you know, you want to chat, you want to send us a message, whatever, this is how we make better games. And it frankly gives us a ton of energy, like I said.
Yeah.
Well, anytime you want to chat, hit us up, come back on. You two are always a blast to have on the show. One more time, tell us about the game, where people can get it, how much it's going to cost. March 7th is the release date. I remember that part.
There you go. Yeah. No, that's all. We've talked about a lot here. So, yeah, Romancevania is coming out March 7th. We haven't announced the price yet, but that'll be coming soon. But we're hitting Steam, EGS, PS5, and Xbox Series. And, you know, at some point in the near future, PS4 and Switch, but, you know, again, game absolutely soars on, all the platforms we have. I cannot wait for people to play it and to get the feedback and to, again, spread that joy.
Spread the love.
Right? There's just a ton. Again, I can't believe we pulled this thing off. Game should not exist because it's an impossible game. Somehow I've been lucky enough in my career to work on, well, two or maybe three impossible games that are just like, what? Well, you had no right making this game, but you did. And, you know, just I the energy for this thing is through the roof, and I just cannot wait for
very glad this one is coming out. This is one that has been on our radars since you've been on the show the first time, and I can't wait to finally get our hands on it and give it a go and check it out. I'm looking forward to when that code shows up in my inbox from Kickstarter.
thank you for the support.
Thank you.
Well, where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing?
At the Deep End Games, I'm at Amanda S. Gardner. Bill is at Game On Gardner. But yeah, we've got some cool, like, if you're on TikTok, the Deep End Games, we've got some fun little TikToks coming with characters and silliness and, yeah. You can find us all over the place.
We also have a Discord, Deep End Discord. So, you know, like I said, we juggle a lot, and you know, we're hoping to grow so that we can manage things a little bit better. Because, you know, frankly, I think you know, one of the challenges of when you're taking on something like of this scope, when we're at the size we're at, it's been a challenge. And like, I really thrive on this sort of thing where we're connecting with other gamers. So. We're hoping to grow that sort of community side of things as well. So
that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, chatting with us again. Come back on soon.
Thank you.
Love having you here. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
No, again, thank you so much. Yeah. It's dream come true to work on this thing and to see the reception so far. It's something that, you know, from when I was 10 years old and I got Castlevania in the parking lot of Dairy Queen for my 10th birthday. That's awesome. To work on a game like that, you know, it's, you know, every single Castlevania has been like, oh man, what it would be like to work on a game like this. Combines, you know, the horror and the platforming and the sort of atmosphere and all the stuff that I've talked about. And
plus love.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I mean,
yes.
The passion in that game, the romance in that game was with me and just the game. Okay. Yeah, I was in love with those games.
For me, it was Alucard, but sure.
I have the Donkey Kong rap in my head with Dairy Queen. So
you're welcome. Dairy Queen. Enjoy that. Now we got a ghost out of here. We got to go.
Have a wonderful night, you too. Rap
and peace out.
Bye, y'all. Nice meeting you.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, that was fun. Yeah, that was really awesome. Good.
That was great.
They're great.
We gotta move on to news. Brooke, you gonna hang out for news or no?
I'm gonna take off. But I'm really glad you guys had me on tonight so I could be a part of that. And I am going to listen to the recording so I can hear Bree's review. Bree, it was cool to be with you.
Yeah, nice to finally be in the same space with you.
Yeah, right. I was excited. I told Joe I was excited. Joe, send her the screenshot so she believes me.
I don't want to take a screenshot. That takes effort.
Okay, I'll do it. Hey, good night, you guys. I'll talk
see
to you
later, Brooke. We'll see you next episode.
Yeah, bye.
All right, we got to move on to news. We got not too much news, but we're going to try getting through it as quick as we can because I know, Bree, you've got some streaming to do as well.
I do, but it's okay if I'm late.
We've got shit to take care of. So,
yeah.
PS Plus games for March were announced. No word on the Xbox games with gold, but PS Plus bringing it once again with Battlefield 2042, Code Vein, and Minecraft Dungeons? So Microsoft is giving better PS Plus games than games with gold games.
Have you seen the tweet from Phil Spencer?
Which one?
No.
he posted earlier. Let me see if I can find it. Oh my gosh.
Is it about Nintendo?
No.
Oh, then no, I have not.
He posted something about, oh my gosh, where is it? I'm trying to find it on Twitter right now, but he basically retweeted PlayStation's announcement of that, saying it's good to see Minecraft on your system. You know, like, here's a good, we're sharing our Microsoft Xbox games. It was fabulous.
Yeah. It's nice to see it there, but fucking give us better shit on Games with Gold, too. Like, here give us is. Minecraft Dungeons on yeah. there.
Always make exciting to see more people getting to experience great games like Minecraft Dungeons. And he retweeted their announcement of the PlayStation Plus games. Yeah, Garden just got it there. Yep.
Oh, love it. And then Chia. Y'all talked about Chia a couple weeks ago. That is going to be hitting the PS Plus Extra tier on March 21st. Launching right to it. So
Nice.
Speaking of things launching direct to a service, Game Pass has a couple of games available now. We've got Atomic Heart out,
which I've been playing.
No controversy surrounding that game at all. Nothing.
Yeah, the only controversy surrounding that is stupid people.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not getting into it on this show. But February 28th, Soul Hackers 2 and Merge in Blade is launching direct to Game Pass.
I don't know what that one is.
It looks like some kind of puzzle-ish auto battler kind of thing. I don't know. It looks interesting. Oh,
that's weird. Okay.
March 2nd, F122 hits EA Play, so that'll be part of Game Pass Ultimate.
Cool.
And then March 3rd, Wolong Fallen Dynasty.
Woot.
Which I am excited about that one. That one looks really fun. So... some other Xbox news is that Brad Smith, Microsoft president, confirmed that Microsoft signed a binding agreement with Nintendo to bring, quote, Xbox games and Activision titles like Call of Duty to more players on more platforms. Microsoft also announced that all Xbox PC games will hit NVIDIA GeForce Now.
Nice.
So they're joining a competing cloud service. They're joining PlayStation Plus. They're hitting the Switch. Now we just need more Xbox games to hit Xbox.
I'm just nice. I'm wondering how the Nintendo part thing is going to go, because I'm really hoping that ends up going both ways instead of just one, because there are some really cool Nintendo games that I've always wanted to play, like Astral Chains. I wanted to play that so bad.
Astral Chain would be cool, but I think that one would need to be platinum too. And Platinum doesn't seem very friendly with Xbox half of the time.
Mm.
They're either shitting all over Xbox or begging them to restart Scalebound. Like, pick a lane. Anyway, the Xbox Game Pass Ultimate Friends and Family Plan has expanded to a few new countries, joining Colombia and Ireland. The new countries are Chile, Hungary, Israel, New Zealand, South Africa, and Sweden.
Nice.
Can't share in a family plan across countries.
Nope.
That was explicitly stated.
Yep.
Well, that kind of sucks. So,
gotta wait for it to hit America. And then we can do an SML family plan.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all for it. I mean, it makes it cheaper.
Hey, my sister gets free Nintendo Switch Online because I do the family plan for that.
Nice.
Yours only $20 more, whatever. The newest Forza Horizon 5 expansion was announced. It will be releasing March 29th and features rally racing. They say it will have the most events in an expansion to date. And Epitaph Radio returns as well. I can't wait to see how butchered the music on there is.
Yeah, I heard a lot of people like excited for that, but I don't know what that Epitaph music stuff is.
Hard rock.
Epitaph, it's a hard rock label. Metal and punk record label.
Okay, interesting, awesome. I approve of that. Then
I'm going to see if I could pull up what was on Epitaph Records on the previous Forza game. They had bands like A Day to Remember, Bad Religion, Bouncing Souls, Every Time I Die, The Offspring, Pennywise, Rancid, Sleeping with Sirens. So.
The Linda Lindas are on this version, so I think that's pretty cool.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, someone posted a track list.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought we saw that
earlier. I didn't see it. I didn't see it until just right now. Let's see.
You son of a bitch.
The Ghost Inside, Aftermath, Alkaline Trio, Blackbird, Mannequin P, Control, Magnolia Park, Feel Something, PTS, Bittersweet Teeth. What? Joyce Manor, Gotta Let It Go, The Linda Lindas, Growing Up, Thick, Happiness, The Offspring, It'll Be a Long Time, Pennywise, Land of the Free, Chad Tepper, whoever that is, Never Moving On, Bad Religion, New Dark Ages, The Linda Lindas again with O, Early Eyes with the Revel, Barry, and Architects, When We Were Young.
I like that Architects song. I knew maybe half of those songs.
Yeah, I don't know many of those, but Forza is usually pretty good at introducing me to new music, so I'll listen to them censored to hell in the game, and then I'll listen to the real versions on iTunes eventually.
Yeah.
Tango Gameworks founder and studio head Shinji Mikami is leaving the company.
That's a shame, I guess.
I mean, it's a bummer, yeah.
Well, this could see that's a lot of conversation there. The Diablo 4 closed beta is going to be happening March 17th through the 19th. The open beta will be the 24th through the 26th. You can play the complete prologue in all of Act 1 and progress up to level 25.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
And from what I hear, progress does carry over to the full game.
I would expect it to. With that much being allowed to be played and that many levels to be gained, I would have to assume,
You never know. Destiny 2 cheat seller Lavi Cheats has been hit with a $6.7 million lawsuit from Bungie, which I think is great because fuck cheaters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any issue with that lawsuit.
I do have some bad news for you, Jacob. Ubisoft is shutting down the All-Stars Online mode in Just Dance 2020, and numerous achievements will be affected, so you got to get your ass dancing, son.
I know, it's shutting down at the end of the month, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that. It's soon.
Yeah, and then also there's achievements for, I think it's 2019, 2018, and 2017. Their servers are getting shut down in like June or something like that.
Jeez, so get dancing.
You got
man.
A lot of shit to do then. Holy shit.
I know, and I still have yet to fire up Rumbleverse.
It's a shame that one's going away. Fucking 6 months and it's dead. What's the point anymore?
Well, that's part of the whole like live services games. Like, why the fuck even bother? I mean, part of like what is attractive to me about like Disney Dreamlight Valley is not only is it chill as fuck, but if that ever goes down, you still have a huge place to fucking wander around in.
Yeah, like, I know. Bad news for Aki, Legend of Dragoon's majestic return has been marred with plenty of audio bugs and soft locking when using Dragoon magic, leaving many wondering if this port was even tested.
It clearly wasn't, because that is one of the main fucking things in the game is that magic. Oh my god.
Yep.
Could they not? Could They own this. How can they fuck this up so bad? Jesus Christ.
Why do people think that adding the trophy support and like rewind and other features is what caused the issues? But who knows?
Rewind, I could totally picture messing up and causing soft locks.
Yeah.
Very easily for a game that fucking old. But they should know how to do it at this point. They've done it for other games.
Apparently they have a bunch of broken PS2 games as well. So.
Oh, so they just never bothered to learn. Okay.
Root Beer saying Chris streamed it and didn't see any issues. I thought Chris was playing his PS1 disc because he has the actual physical game. Or was he playing it off the PS5? I didn't catch that stream, so I don't know what he's playing on. Warner Brothers Discovery confirmed in a conference call that Mortal Kombat 12 is supposedly releasing this year. Surprise!
God damn it, there's my fucking news item.
Suck it, Jacob.
I'm not gonna lie, I was a little surprised, because first off, there was no official announcement. The CEO of Warner Brothers Discovery accidentally let it slip during a call this morning. And on top of it, everybody was expecting Injustice 3, because it's been a while since Injustice 2. We actually got an animated movie that I'm probably going to be watching this weekend. And like the comics have been chugging along pretty well. And so it's like it's time for, you know, a new Injustice. Although Ed Boon had been like hinting at like, oh, maybe it's going to be Mortal Kombat versus DC 2. And now it's just, it's Mortal Kombat 12 coming by the end of the year.
Surprise.
Okay. Cool. Oh, well. I guess.
No, that's all the news I have. Anything on your end?
I mean, I just talked about it.
Hey, Aki, anything on your end?
I'm useless. You should know that by now.
Very true. Brie, any news you want to talk about?
I mean, I think I'm good.
you're all just helping so much.
You know what? Shut the fuck up. All right. I post shit on our Facebook page. All right. You just have
what
to wait.
What do you post on the Facebook
page? I play a lot of video games. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I post memes and news articles on the podcast Facebook page. You just have to like, you scroll through like 20 memes to find that one article I post and
make
sure.
What's the last interview that was posted on the Facebook page?
What do you mean? The last episode?
Yes.
Oh God. I don't know.
With an interview.
It was the last. Let's find out.
No, let's not find out, because it'll just make me madder.
There you go. I was trying to think like the last thing I posted. I mean, it's might be old news at this point. I don't know. You know, there's been a bunch of things that have announced, like different updates and things. I happened to see on my feed recently that they're doing some updates to the Chrono Cross remaster.
An update this week.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, there's people out there even with remasters that are doing some continued improvements to do sort of stuff like that, and that's just good to hear. I think people supporting
it's nice
games.
To see Square imagine. Doing something with Xbox this year.
Yep.
They're like, JK, we're just gonna delist everything.
Yeah.
I honestly wouldn't be shocked.
Oh man, all right, should we dive into reviews then?
We could do that.
Senor.
Cool. All right, we're gonna start off first game to talk about. Yeah, a little. First game to start off tonight is Tales of Symphonia Remastered, developed and published by Bandai Namco Entertainment, released February 17th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $39.99. In a dying world, legend has it that a chosen one will one day rise from amongst the people, and the land will be reborn. The line between good and evil blurs in this epic adventure where the fate of two interlocked worlds hangs in the balance. Follow the journey of Lloyd Irving as he and his friends try to save both worlds. Brie, what is going on with Lloyd that doesn't involve Knockout City?
All right, well, first of all, plot spoiler warning for a 20-year-old game. I had to actually think about that the original game came out 20 years ago, and honestly, going back and playing it has been an interesting experience, because of course I remember the first two times that I played the game and what I was doing in my life at that time. And I think that that's kind of the really cool thing about remasters in general, is just giving you this incentive to go back and replay a beloved favorite or something that is maybe kind of new to you. And so, you know, our story is in some ways a little cliche. You know, we have this sort of chosen one mentality. We've got like coming of age stories and all these things in there, but lots of plot twists along the way that, of course, you don't want to spoil in case you haven't somehow played this game and you're a fan of the genre or the Tales series. But we do have Lloyd, of course. I have some notes on the characters here because, of course, Lloyd, he's kind of a foundling raised by dwarves. He's voiced by Scott Menville, who does Robin in Teen Titans, by the way, voice acting in this game. There's some really great actors, really great choices there. We have Colette Brunel. She is just the sweetest, agreeable bean, chosen of mana to save the world, and a super klutz. We have Rain Sage, who is their professor. She's a crazed history buff, archaeology fanatic. She likes to slap the shit out of people. And she is the older sister of Genus, best friend of Lloyd, who is a boy genius, a loyal friend, a tiny attack mage. And then we have the Deus Ex Machina, Kratos Arian, voiced by Cam Clark. You guys know
the legendary Cam Clark.
Liquid Snake, Mr. Leonardo of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Fucking
I know, right?
Okay, that I know. All right, cool.
And so many other more. Those are just two that I picked out of a list for like my quick notes here. And actually, he also, I had to like refresh myself with this, but he actually also appears as a character in Tales of Vesperia, which I think is neat. So, you know, little connection between the worlds there, although, you know, not all of the Tales series directly connect to each other. There are a lot of worlds that do interconnect in different ways, which is honestly part of the story of Symphonia, is this cross between different worlds. So, one of the other things about Tales series, if you're not familiar, is that they are kind of an action RPG. I don't want to call them exactly an action RPG, but they do have the linear battle system, which is an active component, as opposed to your typical turn-based, which I think is really cool. But you do have the options to make that a manual function, a semi-auto, or an automatic function, so you can set up different strategies for your characters. And they have actually maintained something that was kind of, I think, unique at the time to like a GameCube, which is where it was originally released, is that you could actually plug in extra controllers and you could put everything on manual and have your friends play the other characters in your party. And you can still do that, which I think is pretty darn cool.
Nice.
They don't get to do too much else unless you're in combat, but that's a pretty cool way to involve the person sitting on your couch with you, like getting involved in the story. And I think that's great that we can continue to do that. So, let's see, what else do I want to say about the plot, the story? And there's more characters I didn't mention. Those are just the top ones that you kind of start out with. And, you know, going back to this, like, I've only gotten maybe like 25 hours into it at this point on this playthrough, but it's my third playthrough, so I think I know the story a little bit.
Does it hold up? That's the big question here.
And I have some notes on that. And it's weird going back to a game that, you know, has these coming of age themes. And, you know, as an older adult, I feel like the story still holds up. But, you know, there's a little bit at first where you're like, oh, you know, the coming of age thing. But then I'm now looking back as a retrospective and the story still holds up because they were so good at character building. And this was the first, I think, in the Tales series that really introduced the affinity system in terms of building character relationships. And you have these little skits that you can go kind of find in the wild, or interacting with certain things allows you to do deeper builds. You have a fortune teller you can talk to that'll kind of tell you how good you are at building and the decisions you're making in certain choice trees with these characters. And it's not as deep as some affinity systems we might have in modern games, but it definitely was a good branching point for that. And it does actually affect some things later on in the game as to how well you've built a relationship with certain people. They might be chosen for a specific plot point where someone gets in danger or something, because of course that's going to pull on your heartstrings as much as possible, right? But you know, I think that there's a different perspective going back and looking at this, where there's deeper concepts about faith and disillusionment. And you know, those are the deeper things you only learn from life experience. And I think going back and seeing this even the third time and finding new things to enjoy with the story. But also it's a reminder, like Dwarven Vow number one, that when we work together, we can attain a peaceful world. So I think that that's a really cool thing. Graphically speaking, they've done an HD remaster. And I gotta say, when I first loaded up the game, I was a little scared. Because the opening animation and the title screen has this like watercolor wash over it where they took the original animation and the original art and they were trying to like cover up the pixels, and I'm like, oh my gosh, is this what the whole game's gonna look like? Because this does not look good. But as soon as you launch into the game for the first time and you see Lloyd sitting, you know, asleep holding his buckets in the classroom, totally not paying attention, zoned out for his punishment for not paying attention, you can clearly see the HD remaster that they have done for this to make it look crisp and clean and all that beautiful cell shading pop. But it's still essentially, you know, a wash over a port, right? So it's not like anything super fancy, but it looks like the memory of what I thought it was, but with that modern sensibility. So I think they did a good enough job. It still has the retro feel, but it looks good on the screen. There were some other little visual things that happened, like some stutters when you're moving between areas, but so minor they were barely noticeable. There was a couple of like tiles in the overworld that like you can see the seam. And you know, I think that that's kind of almost part of the like the value of the retro aspect to it for me, that like I don't mind because the actual play, the speed of it and everything feels natural for what it should be on something modern, even though you're, you know, playing a throwback. So I think that it worked really good. I would say the only thing that was kind of disappointing is that they didn't add anything really extra. They've added some quality of life stuff in terms of menus, the things that we come to expect, like being able to write bumper or something between characters in a menu is there, which is great. Makes it go through a lot faster. The menus are beautiful. You can still customize them and kind of work with the different colors if that's what you want. The music, of course, still good. I don't know that they did too many improvements for that, but again, I mean, it plays beautifully. It sounds good. If you guys don't know about the original composers of the game, include people who have worked on gigantic games. You know, well, of course, we've got Shinji Tamura, who did, you know, a lot of stuff for Tales, but we also have, I'm going to butcher his name, Sakuraba, who is known for Star Ocean, Golden Sun, Tales games, and Dark Souls. He's also working on the upcoming Ayuden Chronicles 100 Heroes, which I'm pretty excited about. So, you know, like, and this is a game that, like, had some firsts for the series, but also the series has some firsts for the genre. I mean, they, even if they didn't have the same sweeping music that we're used to in some other JRPG series like Final Fantasy or that sort of thing, they had good music and they paid attention to audio and voice acting. There's actually voice acting in the original SNES Tales game, which is wild to think of.
Yeah, like tiny little voice clips.
Yeah, but still, that's just not something that, you know, you think of as like a big feature in some of those games. Like we're still, So, I would say that the only disappointing thing to me, like if we're going for a big remaster, I would have loved that they could have had like some of the skits to be voiced or just a couple of added, you know, dialogue lines that they could have gotten some of the voice actors back. I think that would have been swell. But I mean, that aside, I mean, this has just been a really enjoyable experience so far. And again, this is my favorite Tales game out of the series of the ones that I've been able to play or watch. Like, this is it for me, you know?
So I'm guessing you enjoyed this one just a little.
A little bit. I would add one other thing, really, that I want to point out in terms of, you know, coming to console and something that we're used to in the ecosystem for trophies or achievements, this is going to be a long completion. Not just because there are a lot of achievements or trophies associated with collecting things, which, you know, if you're into JRPGs and you love collecting all the things and finding all the secret monsters and all the little collectibles, like, you know, you were already going to do that anyway, but there are a lot of achievements surrounding that. There is an achievement for clearing the stories on 3 different difficulty levels and putting in at least 100 hours in the game.
100 hours, I don't think, will be too hard. Yeah,
that's not going to be hard at all, but still.
Different difficulties?
There's essentially hard and a mania level, which, I mean, I'm just even thinking of the optional boss in Osa Trail, like, on easy was so hard, you kind of have to wait until the end of the game to go back and kill him anyway. I mean, he's in the freaking trailer, like, in opening animation for the game, and I'm just like, I can't even think about that on mania, that's crazy. other features, one more, since we were talking about animals earlier and that we had some dog fans, let me just tell you, I mean, I don't know that we've ever, the discussion of can you pet the dog was not around when this game first came out, but there's like a million dogs in this game and you can have conversations with all of them. And I just assume that that means we're petting them and you can pet all the dogs. Okay.
Yay.
There's like at least one or two dogs in every village. Pet them all.
Nice.
That's the important part of the review.
Right?
It is. That's what we're here for. Bun buns and petting dogs. The game's $40. What are your thoughts on it?
I mean, it's an absolute buy it for me. If you're a fan of the series, like you couldn't get this game in a playable form. I mean, you could get, there's been other editions that have come out over time on PlayStation 3, PlayStation 2, the original GameCube, if you wanted to play it in its original form. I mean, like you're going to have to go get a GameCube if you don't have one, you're going to have to track it. You're going to spend a lot more money than you would to just get something that's going to play in this form right here in a system you already have. And, you know, you're going to get to see it in a slightly different way. If you're new to the series, newer to the series, whether you've never played a Tales game or you've only played some of the newer ones, I would highly recommend just the story alone. This is like one of the best ones that they have to offer. And this is a great way to get caught up without feeling like you're diving too deep into that retro thing and kind of get where I feel like the Tales series really got its footing and continued in the future all the way up to Arise. So I'd say it's a buy it for me.
Sounds good. Awesome. Well, that is it for you, Bree. Thank you so much for coming on and hanging out with us.
Thanks for having me. I am going to dip and go do my thing, but I'll be listening a little in the background.
Where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing?
Well, I mean, I'm on Twitter at Lady McGreed. I'm at Lady McGreed about everywhere, but I'm also going to go hang out on Twitch here, do some shooty things. I don't know, but yeah.
Cool. I can't wait for half of our audience to leave us. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
That was a really fun interview earlier. And,
it was.
Yeah.
Those two were great. I love when they're on. They're always a blast. All right, moving on. More reviews. We got more to take care of. Next game is Gigantosaurus Dino Kart, developed by 3D Clouds, published by Outright Games, released February 17th. Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Be your favorite dino and speed around in a kart championship that's almost as big as Gigantosaurus's appetite. With 15 tracks full of awesome power-ups and obstacles, help for younger players, and up to 4 players in split-screen play, the whole family can join this prehistoric racing party. Jacob, what is going on in Gigantosaurus Dino Kart?
So it seems like this is like Outright's new thing, getting into the kart racing ones. I mean, we already had a race with Ryan. We got a Paw Patrol one, and now Gigantosaurus is the latest
Blaze
one
to get in this the machines.
Yeah, but I don't know if I count that as like kart racing, but
yeah, it was
whatever. A little
Fast
kid
and Furious.
I haven't finished playing through that, and also that seems kind of mission based.
Yeah, it's still racing.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Whatever.
Anyway.
Anyway, so with Gigantosaurus, the plot of it is that they built a bunch of racetracks, and so they're just going to have a bunch of races. That's really like the plot. Don't read too much into it. There is an adventure mode, which is really just you do a bunch of cups, which is like 4 to 6 tracks on each one. Standard stuff where you try to get points. But yeah, so with this one, it is a standard kart racing game. You push the A button for gas, X is your weapon, and you are supposed to use the right or left bumper for drift. And unfortunately, you cannot edit these settings. Now, I believe Outright said that they're going to talk to the devs and see, you know, about changing this, or at least like making this an option in future games, which has now led to a joke about my sausage fingers up on the Outright Discord channel. So
really,
oh yeah. Yeah, I'm now known as Mr. I'm known as Mr. Sausage Fingers.
Oh geez.
So yeah. But anyway, so there are very like much like other kart racing games mostly aimed at kids, there are weapons in this, but I'm not going to lie, most of the weapons feel kind of useless. Like there is this rock that you could just shoot forward, but that's the thing. It only shoots forward. It bounces off the walls twice and then it's boom, gone. You can't fire it backwards, which I get for simplicity's sake for kids, but it's still kind of like, you know, if you're an adult, this is the kind of stuff you're used to, and everyone generally copies off this kind of stuff. There's like a potion you can throw behind you. There is a thing that'll make a splatter on the screen if they're too close when, you know, the mist blows. And of course there's like a speed boost. Again, all standard stuff. And there are 8 different racers that you could choose from, which would do have skins that you could swap out, depending on the amount of races that you've played. You know, for kids, they're obviously going to choose their favorite characters, which is kind of nice because, as it turns out, none of the racers, all your speed is dependent on racer skill. Like, all cars move at the same speed. It's how good you are, or not how good you are. That's going to determine how well you do. But where this game really shines, to be honest, is the tracks themselves. All of them are gorgeous. I wasn't as thrilled with the nighttime ones just because they were a little hard to see, but Outright does pretty well, or 3D Clouds, I should say, does pretty well with this, and they're still easy to navigate for the kids, but it's just, they're, especially during the daytime ones, it's just, they are so vibrant, there's so much stuff going on along the sides. I love how Gigantosaurus actually roams around, although I think there's also a Spinosaurus that sometimes roams around on the tracks as well. And the first time you see it, you're just like, oh God, this, like, I was not warned about this. And so he could actually stomp on you, or at least just prevent you from being able to move forward. So, you need to get good at dodging Gigantosaurus as well as the other racers.
Yeah, I've ran into him a few times. He's kind of a jerk.
But, the levels look, like, honestly, the levels look gorgeous. And there are, like, little,
my one problem with the visuals in this game, and I've mentioned this in previous 3D Clouds games, and I hope that they address this eventually. The tracks look gorgeous and the water looks amazing, but there's no effect when you drive through the water puddles. Like, there's no splash from the tires. Like, it's just visual dressing. I wish there was some kind of interaction between the cart and the water, some kind of like spray from the tires.
I thought that there was.
I didn't see any. Like, when you drive through,
I mean, there's the
animated water.
Okay.
When you're driving through the animated water, I'm talking about just like the static puddles that are on the map.
Okay.
Like, they look different from the animated water. They look like clear water puddles that you just drive over. And I wish there was some kind of interactivity there. It's such a minor gripe, but, you know, I got a nitpick.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that obviously has stuck around for a few other games. Crud. Oh, my only gripe with, like, how they look, honestly, the final cup, which is set around the volcano area, it's all mud, stones, volcano, and they all kind of look the same. And so, like, when you're getting to that final cup, it's just kind of like, whatever. But yeah, in terms of a kid's, like, a licensed kid's kart game, this is honestly a really solid title. Like, I mean, it's no Mario Kart. It's not even like Crash Team Racing, but, you know, for a game that the whole family can enjoy, even kids like, you know, 4 or 5, it's not particularly hard.
I'd say, and even younger, with the assists that they have in the game with auto driving.
That's true. Yeah, you can do auto driving, which, if you're an achievement hunter, plenty of the people do. but yeah, my only other gripe about this game, and this is something that they did say that they took notes on as well, the tutorial doesn't actually tell you how to drift. You kind of have to figure that out yourself, or look in the main menu for the controls, and then you just kind of have to figure it out on your own. I'm not sure why drifting wasn't included, but it just isn't. So, whatever. But honestly, I was pretty entertained with it.
Nice. Well, it is $40. What are your thoughts?
I'd be more cool with 30, but I mean, if you're like a family,
I find us saying that, like, everything Outright Games puts out, it's like, I wish it was $10 cheaper.
Yeah.
Like, them and Microids, I feel the same thing of, like, I don't know.
I don't know about 40, but if it was 30, like, I don't know. But at the same time, I mean, like, how many of these families are buying games, like, on a regular basis, like us, you know? So it's just like, if if you were not buying games like all the time, then yeah, $40 is fine. Otherwise, you might want to wait for a sale. And if you're a kart racing enthusiast, understand that this is aimed at kids. Like, this is not a complex game. You may want to wait for a sale on that one, but honestly, I dug it. I was fine with it.
Cool. All right, changing gears ever so slightly. The next game is Shadow Warrior 3 Definitive. What?
I thought we were going to talk about Ben 10.
Okay, then talk about Ben 10.
Okay, this one's just going to be a quick one, just because so I'm satisfying requirements as a brand ambassador. But I got to play through the original Ben 10 video game released by Outright. It is a 3D beat 'em up with some platforming stuff in there. Honestly, there is not a lot to this game. There's like three main villains that you have to beat. You have to collect stuff, and also you'll get your different alien power. I never watched Ben 10, so first off, understand that I'm not really too sure what the hell goes on in this show.
I expected you to be a Ben 10 guy.
Mm-mm. No,
I loved Ben 10.
It was
disappointed in you.
It came out after my time. I was busy in college doing extracurricular activities.
I watched it in my 20s. It was still fantastic.
Yeah, I was busy like getting baked and watching Dukes of Hazzard in my dorm room.
You could have gotten baked and watched Ben 10.
All right, hold on. Did you just say the Dukes of Hazzard are boring?
Kinda.
Yeah.
I will punch you both in your mouths.
No, like, you wouldn't, because you'll have a friggin' Southern flag waving white.
I don't know where you're going with this, but I don't
he's
think
trying
you
to make
need
a,
to continue.
He's trying to, make a con- he's trying to make a comment about the General Lee. All right, first off, was it that? Yeah, but I also watched A-Team, NYPD Blue, various Star Treks, all under above the influence. Yeah, I'm not going to disagree on that one either. Anyway, Ben 10. So, 3D platformer, or 3D beat-em-up with some platforming tossed in. You pretty much just have to get all of the alien powers, which there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason as to like how like Ben gets them along the way. It's just like, all right, well, we want to throw in some new mechanics for you. And by the time that you're at the final boss, the final third of the game, you already have all their powers. And if you've been playing the game like decently, you should have everybody fully upgraded. That being said, it's a pretty chill game. I didn't really have any issues with the gameplay itself. Voice acting got kind of annoying, and the environments all kind of blend together. But honestly, it's on sale pretty frequently, at least when Outright has a sale on stuff. It's also usually bundled with Ben 10 Power Trip, so you can, you know, get both Ben 10 games if you so choose. But yeah, like in terms of like early Outright games, this one's a pretty solid one. I dug it.
Speaking of how early it is, we originally covered this one back on episode 332.
Yeesh.
From 2017. The funny thing is, 332, just three episodes later on 335, Amanda Gardner was on.
Oh, huh.
Yeah. That's crazy, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, good shit. Next game, changing, you know, gears just a little. This would have been funny the first time. Shadow Warrior 3 Definitive Edition, developed by Flying Wild Hog, published by Devolver Digital, released February 16th, Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Take an adrenaline-fueled journey through a mythical Japanese realm in the Definitive Edition of Shadow Warrior 3, packed with new features, and enjoy an ultra-violent blend of fast-paced gameplay, razor-sharp melee combat, and spectacular free-running movement. Jacob, tell us about your time with Shadow Warrior 3 Definitive Edition.
I'm not gonna lie, I was really, really, really hoping that, like, the description that you rattled off was gonna give, like, you know, hey, this is what happens in this game, because I don't understand what the heck is going on in this story at all. But damn, if this game isn't entertaining and beautiful as hell. So you're playing this
fallen guy, corporate shogun Lo Wang, and his former nemesis return in Shadow Warrior 3, the latest entry in the gore-soaked, wisecracking FPS series. Embark on an improbable mission to recapture an ancient dragon Lo Wang unwittingly unleashed from its eternal prison, tearing your way through a fractured land infested with demons using a dynamic arsenal of blades and bullets. Does that help you a little more?
I guess.
You're
I
mean,
that's what I kind of already had pieced together, though. But anyway, all right. So the story keeps going back between present day and the past. And yeah, so you accidentally unleashed this dragon that you were fighting, and it's now destroying the countryside, and you have to now fix this issue that you caused. And you have to do it with a mix between various guns, like whether it's a standard six shooter, a shotgun, or like this grenade launcher-esque kind of thing. Or you can use your sword to slash the hell out of everybody. It's up to you. If you're playing on easy mode like me, the ammo and health is plentiful. Enemies are, they'll still give you a time depending on who exactly you're facing off against. But yeah, and it's just, it's you, like, you are mixing up a ton of ultraviolence, bloody ultraviolence, I should say, with wall running and jumping and using, like, these, like, hookshot kind of thing to, like, navigate your butt all over the screen. And it is, like, it is just this, like, hyper-intense, think of, did you see the movie Crank yes. with Jason Statham? Think of it like with that kind of level of energy constantly as you are mowing down and slashing all these bad guys. It kind of feels like this, like the game, it's a first person shooter that comes with a vial of Coke to go along with it. And it is just like, it just doesn't let up like ever. Like, I mean, yeah, sure. It lets up as you open a door, but then as soon as you go into the next spot, like, yo, you're back at this shit again. It's just a
violent ballet of gore and bullets.
Yeah, and like, and it's caught up with cutscenes that, like, I don't know what the heck's going on in them. I assume I should have played Shadow Warrior 1 and 2 before this, but yeah, like, the game introduces new enemies and bosses, relatively quickly, not enough that I felt overwhelmed, but there was one arena. I want to say it was after the second boss, but essentially, like, I just kept getting knocked off the edge, and the game does not do like an insta kill. Like, instead, like, you're just hanging out on the side of the mountain. There's no way for you to get up. And so I'm just like, I don't know why you just aren't killing me right here, but okay. And then I have to hop off to
kill you.
Well, the thing is that it's just like, if I can't get back up on the mountain, then you should. I mean, it like, I don't know why the heck I'm hanging out here. And it just got really frustrating sometimes, is like, I would keep getting knocked off by these huge guys. That was the only point that I ever like quit, in the game. It's like, it's just like the little spiky guys with like the saw blades in the front. There was just one arena I just kept getting butt fucked in by those guys and getting shoved off like the side of the mountain. But other than that, like, it's solid gameplay. The tutorial takes time to show you what to do. The story, I don't know what's going on, but as I said, I also didn't play the first two games in the series. But if you're a fan of first person shooters, if you're a fan of, like, you know, absolutely bloody action, that's just nonstop from start to finish, Shadow Warrior 3 Definitive Edition, this is definitely up your fucking alley. This is one of my favorite games I've gotten to review so far this year.
Nice. Well, it is $40. What are your thoughts?
That is a damn deal. Holy shit. Honestly, I thought it was going to be $60.
Well, it originally was. This is the expanded version that's been out for a little bit. Now it's, what, almost a year now, I think it's out?
I don't know.
So this is the expanded and enhanced version. Some of the new features include a new game plus mode, a survival mode, a hero mode with game modifiers offering a greater challenge. And if you want even more challenge, there's a hardcore difficulty.
Yeah, fuck that.
Yeah, I'm going to stick to easy.
Yeah, but for honestly, for $40, that is such a fucking steal. Go for that. Yeah, absolutely. This isn't even like cheap ass, which was $10. No, $40. That is great. Go.
Cool.
All right.
All right, next up is Remoteness, developed and published by KR Games, released February 22nd on Xbox One and Series X and S for $24.99. New York 2034, you wake up after what seemed to be a terrible nightmare, while it's not. The district has been evacuated and isolated overnight by the army after an electrical meteor shower hit the Earth. Fight, explore, survive, and try to escape from this hell. Aki, what is going on in Remoteness?
Okay, in this, you play as some schmuck who has asthma, and every step you take just is pushing you ever closer to dying of asphyxiation, even though that is not how asthma works. So throughout the game, you go around your city. You don't get too far because lots of it's closed off. And at night, monsters come out. I don't know if they're aliens. I don't know if they're mutated creatures. I don't know if they came out of someone's butthole. Who knows? But they're annoying little shitbags and hard to kill. And throughout the entire day and night, there's soldiers around. All of them will kill you if they see you. Because, I don't know, they're assholes, I guess? I don't know. Helpful. Yeah, very. And as you explore the city, you occasionally have to go and stop by and get a vial, basically, of medicine that staves off your asthma. It's free, so it's not like you have to find resources to craft it or find money and barter for it or anything. No, they just give you one for free, but you can only have one. Otherwise, you have health packs to help your health, even though the game does not show you a health meter anywhere at all. It just occasionally will tell you, hey, you're getting low on health, and then it'll go away, and it might pop up later after you've taken a bunch more damage. So I don't know if you start healing automatically. I have no idea. You start off with a crossbow that has 9 bolts in it. I don't think you can get any more bolts, but you can pull them out of dead people, so don't miss, because you'll never fucking find them if you miss. Just could tell you that right now. You will never fucking find that bolt. However, when you kill the soldiers, you can steal their weapons. So you very quickly can, well, not very quickly, but you can eventually get an arsenal of weaponry down. Sadly, you're only able to carry 2 weapons with you at any given time, and each weapon has its own ammunition that you have to also obtain off of killing soldiers and hoping that they have extra ammo on them, or at least have another copy of the same weapon you do, so you can steal the ammo from it either way. And I can't tell you what goes on in the story, because you're kind of like, here, you need to go get medicine, and now here, do stuff. Just do stuff. I had no idea what the story was about, because like his nightmare is the only bit of story you have, and then you're like, here, live. And I was like,
An open-ended, just survive as long as you can kind of deal?
I think there's supposed to be a story, because like you're able to hack things, and apparently if you have hack enough things, I think you're supposed to be able to escape the city or something. I'm not entirely sure. Because you have to actually explore the city, which is very difficult when you have that asthma, and there's only one place you can get the asthma, so you can only travel so far before you're like, well, I kind of have to go back now in order to get that medication, because it's only at that one place. At least I could only find it at that one place. And your weapons are against the monsters are so fucking dinky that it's like there's luck, because okay, the medicine is in a subway system, in one section of the subway system. There are lots of areas you can enter the subway. However, to get to that area in the subway system from any of these other ones, you have to travel along the subway lines by foot. The problem is, there's monsters down there, and they're bitches. They will kill you very quickly, and they take many, many, many bullets to make go the fuck away. And I'm pretty sure if you save and load a save, they come the fuck back. All of the things do. If you reload a save, after you've killed them, you save and you reload that save, everything's fucking bad. I hate that. Because they're hard to kill. They're so hard to kill. Jeez. So it's like I think somehow you're supposed to clear the subway, I think, is one of the first things you're supposed to do after you get your medication. But, like, I don't fucking know how, because it's so hard to kill these monsters, and they just come back. If you get to the next area and it does an autosave and you happen to die and you reload that save, all the enemies you just killed, they're back again. So it's like, I don't know what to do. So I don't think I got anywhere really in that game, because I didn't understand what I needed to do. They would just be like, clear the subway by hacking this thing. And I'm like, where the fuck's that thing? Is it actually in the subway? Is it in a tower somewhere outside? I don't know what I'm doing here. And then to even attempt to find it, it was so fucking hard. And it might as well be like World War Z or something, where you go into the game and you're like, your character is eventually just going to die. That, and there's not really a story to it. You're just trying to survive. That's how I feel this game is. And I don't think it's supposed to be that. I think it actually has a story. It's just so hard and everything is so vague that it's very difficult to do anything.
Well, the game's sitting at $25. What are your thoughts on it?
I'm going to have to say pass it on this one, and at least until someone's figured it the hell out and can like put up a walkthrough so you know what the hell you're supposed to do.
Just to give you a start and figure out.
Yeah, because like it is very easy to die in here, because you don't got body armor or anything, and I don't think you can find body armor. Everything will kill you real quick, because the soldiers, they all have guns. They will shoot the ever-living fuck out of you. The monsters, they're faster than you, and they can kill you real quickly with their giant claws. There's even drones flying around, and they all have machine guns, and guess what you don't have?
Guns.
Body armor. So it's like, you die so quickly, so easily, and if you run too much, you die of asphyxiation because you have asthma. That's still not how asthma works. So it's so hard to even be like a try it on this one, because it's just, it's so hard, and there's just nothing to guide you to do anything. I can't suggest it.
What would you do to fix it?
I would make all your goals a lot clearer. Cause like one of the first ones is get to the subway to get your medicine. Whatever subway system you're close to, entry into the subway you're close to is where it tells you to go into. The medicine isn't in all of them, it's only in one of them. So once you go down there, then it doesn't tell you where to go after that. So it has markers, but they need to be placed in the exact place they are. And the mini map should be up at all times and be easier to understand. Because as is, you have to actually go into a menu to look at the mini map, and it's very small in the center of screen. I mean, super small, and I have a big fucking TV. I couldn't read anything on it, really. And it only shows, like, a fragment of the block you're on. And this place is many, many blocks big. And then, you know, maybe make it a little easier to do less damage for enemies, because they kill you so quickly, and don't let them fucking respawn. Like, if you kill an enemy, they're dead, and they should just stay dead, because it takes too many resources that you don't get enough of to kill them. So those are the changes I would make, and then I think it would be a much better game, because people could actually get things done and hopefully survive a little more, and they'd know exactly what they needed to do. Because I've just been wandering around the city trying to figure out what the fuck to do the entire time I played that game after I got my medicine. And it took me like 3 or 4 plays before I even figured out where to get my medicine, because I would die trying to figure out where to get it. All I knew was it was in the subway, and I didn't realize exactly how important it was. Because again, there is a bar that tells you you're dying from lack of oxygen or something, because asthma, that's not how that works. I will continue to point that out. But the game didn't tell me that's what that bar was. I just thought it was a stamina bar, because it is also your stamina bar. But it slowly goes down and never refill. So you can just run less and less and less. And eventually, when you can no longer run anymore, you just kill over.
Nice.
So I had to restart it like 4 different times before I figured out, oh, I need to go into this specific subway, grab that medicine, and when I start getting really low, take that medicine, and then I have all my stuff back, and then I have to just get back to this asshole because he refuses to give me more than one of this life-saving medicine. So, I cannot say this one, sadly.
All right, well, moving on. Next game is Rooftop Renegade, developed and published by Melonhead Games, released February 17th. Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $17.99. Rooftop Renegade is an action platformer all about speed and flow. Outrun capture through futuristic skyscrapers, channeling powerful abilities from your hover blades. Boost through levels under constant bombardment. Avoid dangerous hazards and make split-second decisions that mean the difference between a new personal best or total wipeout. Jacob, tell us about your time with Rooftop Renegade.
It's not even total wipeout. You're captured and you're thrown in the back of the police van, which I found out the other day after our interview with the devs.
Fuck the police.
Yo, for real, that was actually, like, after we talked to them, that was the first time that I had actually been captured. And I was like, oh, this is what it looks like. This, oh, this is disappointing.
Jeepers.
So, yeah, so this game, which is obviously and confirmed by the devs, inspired by Jet Set Radio and other like cyberpunk titles, you're in this very cyberpunk future and you are on these like rollerblades, and it's pretty much just getting from point A to point B. And as you are trying to outrun the evil soldiers of this, like, what is it called? Globacorp or something?
Yeah, something like that.
It's standard, you know, evil business entity of the future name. You have to, like, start balancing out your momentum and your speed. And when are you going to jump? And as the game introduces other mechanics, including, like, diving, you know, you really, like, it really becomes this, like, precision platformer that you just end up having to play over and over again, you know, partially to beat your current, like, best time on some of these levels, but also because inevitably you're going to start getting caught by the police and stuff like that, and they're either going to screw up your time royally, or they're just going to straight up capture you. And when they... Honestly, there are plenty of levels where I just would have rather have been captured. It's just like, just put me out of my friggin' misery. then it's just like, oh, good. You're going to blow up the pipe again. And I'm going to have to like be stuck on the ground, which is way slower. And yeah, you can recover sometimes, but it is, I mean, this game is, it's deceptively simple. And as it goes on more and more, and of course, with a game like this, you can upgrade you know, your gear and stuff like that, so you can have skates that are gonna make you go faster, they're gonna make you jump, or they're gonna improve your launch. You know, you are gonna be able to get all this stuff, and so there is a ton of replay value in this game. My only thing is that just understand, like, the difficulty does get ramped up, and it does start, in my opinion, it felt like it was more like pretty quickly it started, like, you know, if you're not into precision platforming or speed running, then this game is not, like, you're gonna have a difficult and not necessarily the funnest time with it. But I still really enjoy it. It's just, I don't know, it, the thing is that, as like, as I said in the interview, it never felt like the game was being cheap to me. It was just, well, I've got to get better at this. Which I do appreciate, that level of retro gameplay where it's just, you know, that's just how it is. It's just, yeah, buddy, you suck. Get good. Come back, you know, come back when you're going to deposit another quarter. instead of just like, oh, no, this game stinks, like, blah, 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 blah. Like, no, it's just, this is a game of skill. It really is. So either get good or look elsewhere.
Well, it's $18. What do you think?
Honestly, 18 is a pretty good price with it. I'm comfortable with that. I would recommend it for $18. Yeah.
Cool. Sounds good. Simon is trying to steal shit off my desk now.
Good. Maybe cat. You should have less shit on your desk.
I should have less shit on my desk. Next game, Remorse, The List, developed by Ash Candy and Truth Key, published by Feardemic, released February 23rd on Xbox One and Switch for $19.99. What secrets lurk in a sleepy little Hungarian town? That's for you to find out. Remorse, The List is a survival horror in the classic sense with open gameplay and inventory and combat. Aki, sounds easy enough. What's going on in Remorse, The List?
Okay, you go through some loopy shit, and suddenly you're in a city. It is filled with a small spackleteen of monsters, and that's it. You have to find some memories, three specific ones, which are just three little objects that you find throughout the area. Why? Because the game has this nice little area that has three areas to place each one, and it tells you, find my memories. So you do, because you always do what you're told. You start off with no weapons. You have to find a weapon. You start off with a little dinky-ass knife, which let me tell you, that is not how you kill monsters. you don't do it. It's not fun. And throughout the game, you can find both guns and some melee weapons like a hammer or a shovel, things like that, or you know, an assault rifle, shotgun. Yeah, you pick whichever you want to use, I guess, really. You just fun. you have very limited inventory space that you can expand by picking up some upgrades. Like you can find some pouches that you can put on your body, as well as a backpack, which opens your spaces by two each, I believe. And then, you know, you also have a primary and secondary weapon area. The primary area is larger, so you can equip a big weapon there when you get them. Otherwise, you can equip two small ones, one in each. And the secondary one's obviously just small, so only a small one that one ever. All the melee weapons are all small. Some of the guns are small, because obviously a pistol doesn't require both hands. Hopefully. You go around, you kill things, you break open boxes to hopefully find loot or battery for your, keep thinking pocket watch. That's not the fucking word. Flashlight. Yeah. You have a flashlight that equips onto your shirt, and you flick it on and off, and you do have to actually worry about batteries. And the battery life of that thing is fucking abysmal. So you're going to be looking for those a lot. Sometimes you'll find health packs in there to heal up for when you get your ass inevitably beat. Which didn't take me very long, because the game doesn't tell you how to equip any of your weapons. So for a while I had the gun, but all I had was my pocket knife, because I couldn't figure out how to equip anything. Because I'm stupid, really. Because right there in the inventory menu, there is a button that says move, that just shows the button and says next to it move. So it's there to move that item, and you actually have to move the item into your secondary primary spot, otherwise it's just gonna sit in your inventory not doing a fucking thing. But the game doesn't tell you that, so I was very upset for a very long time trying to figure out do that, because I don't read, obviously. Whilst you're getting all these items from different places, you have to sometimes solve some puzzles, and they're all completely different types of puzzles, so I can't really be like, this type of puzzle. Like, there's a water level puzzle where you drop stuff in, and the water has to reach a certain area, and you figure out what you have to drop in and how many of what you have to drop in by reading a story, and then just figuring out the answer from the story that's in like five different parts. There's another one that's like a door code, and you just have to find the right combination, which is written throughout different floors of a building you're in, things like that. So they're kind of all over the place. None of them are the exact same. There's like five-ish of them. There are a bunch of different types of enemies. As you get to new areas, you unlock more enemies that show up. And you don't really have a choice in that matter. They're all going to eventually show up, and they're going to wreck your shit. Just get used to it. Because, again, you have no body armor, and they hit hard. So hard. But not only do you find, you know, healing kits, there's also, you know, wall-mounted healing kits around as well, where you just open the cabinet and poof, it gives you 50 health. Everything just gives you 50 health if you use it. So yay, nice. And yeah, you're just trying to get these things for a reason that even after beating the game, I still don't really get it. There are some moral choices you get to make in the game, which apparently do affect an ending. And there are a couple bosses that aren't particularly all that hard. There's also three different difficulties, and you have to play the prior difficulty to unlock the next difficulty, and you have to beat all three of them. So have fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now the game's $20. What do you think?
That's fine. I would personally prefer if it was like 10 or 15, but 20's fine. I don't think very many people are going to have a problem with that for $20.
Cool. All right, one final game to talk about tonight is called Mosaic Chronicles Deluxe, developed by Error 300, published by Red Deer Games, released February 17th on the Switch for $12.99. Enter a fantastic world full of magic and charm. Rebuild legendary tales with Mosaic Chronicles Deluxe. A new puzzle game experience awaits. Jacob, what's going on in Mosaic Chronicles Deluxe? Jacob?
Informative.
Yep. Shit, sorry. I forgot to turn my mic back on because I turn it off out of respect for Aki.
Derp.
So I don't interrupt
her call reviews. Bullshit, but okay. No,
I seriously do.
Derp.
Anyway.
Oh, that's actually kind of sweet of you, though. No, it's
not. He's lying.
Shut up, Joe. I have a button on this one so I can actually just turn off the headset, unlike the other one where I have to flip up the microphone. Anyway. Unlike traditional jigsaw puzzles one, this is a mosaic one, which means that they make, like, the shapes are just, they're just, like, whatever, like, odd shapes that they want to make, whether it's, like, flowers or just making it look like stained glass. And, you know, obviously you put together all the different puzzle pieces to look like a picture. And the art, you know, it's nice. It's not the best puzzle art that I've ever seen, but it, you know, it was fine with what I did or what, like, the ones that I got to. But the real problem with this game, and this is like the unfortunate thing, is that there is a tutorial for it, but it goes by like at blazing fast speeds. Keep in mind, this game is a Nintendo Switch title as opposed to the Xbox ones I usually review. And with this one, you know, the tutorial runs through like what all the controls are, and it was an absolute pain in the ass to get any puzzle pieces out on the thing. And it's not even like that Alice in Wonderland one that I reviewed like a week or two ago with just like a slow cursor. This one, I'm like, I had to use, even though like the tutorial said, oh, you can use this for this and like whatever, I ended up having to use my finger on the touch screen to move all of the pieces off of the side, drag them over, and then have to use the buttons to like rotate the piece. But the problem is that not all of the puzzle pieces will let you be selected for whatever reason until later on in the puzzle. And so even if like, you know, where the piece is supposed to go and it's completely like, it's obviously like, all right, all I have to do is just finish this edge. Just let me pick up this puzzle piece. It's like, nope, you got to pick up the, like, all these other puzzle pieces that are higher on the list before that. And it's just like, there was no rhyme or reason to it. And it just drove me up the wall. And so on, like, honestly, it felt like it just took me longer to get any of these puzzles done than it would have done playing literally every other puzzle game I've played on Xbox and Switch. And it was just like, it was really frustrating because I wanted to like it. I liked the art, you know. If there was music, I don't remember it, to be honest. But it's just the gameplay of like getting the puzzle pieces out there and rotating it. It was just such a chore when it worked that I'm just like, I wasn't having fun, unfortunately. And like, you know, puzzle games, like, they're not necessarily the most fun games out there, but they're at least relaxing. This game was neither fun or relaxing for me. I was honestly disappointed with it.
That's a bummer. Oof. Well, it is sitting at $12.99 on the Switch right now. What are your thoughts?
If they could fix the game and just make it so you could just pick up any bloody piece whenever you want to, great. Like, then, yeah, I would be totally game for the $12 thing, and I would, like, happily be like, oh, yeah, pick up this game. As it is, this is a broken puzzle game, and I'm just annoyed with it. For $12, absolutely not. There's better stuff out there.
Okay, now, how about this? It's okay. Red Deer, which they have usually have some pretty big sales on the Switch. It's apparently on sale for $1.99. What are your thoughts on the game for $2?
Okay, fine, fuck it, but be prepared for a very frustrating experience. Like, congratulations, Joe. This is my first fine fuck it review.
It's called fuck it, why not?
I know, but this is...
There is no fine fuck it.
You know what I mean, Joe. You know what it is.
Are you British? That you've said bloody twice in the past 5 minutes.
It's in my vernacular, all right? Whatever. I'm sorry.
I think it's funny you say that, but I've said that numerous times in the past, and you've never brought that up.
You haven't said it twice so close together to be noticeable.
Did you hear that, Aki? You're not noticeable.
I'm fine with that, actually.
Shush. For $2, yeah, fuck it, why not?
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Big thanks to Amanda and Bill Gardner for coming on and hanging out with us, keeping us company, chatting about Romancevania, which comes out March 7th. Keep your eyes peeled for that one. Big thanks to Brooke and Bree for coming on, hanging out with us. Big thanks to you two, I guess, since I have to put up with you anyway. Music, we are going to play something from our good friend Mustin, a song called Sex Appeal, KK Sex Appeal from Animal Crossing. So anyone have any final words before we get to that?
Sex appeal. It's the one thing that this podcast has never had.
Speak for yourself, motherfucker.
I ain't speaking for you, that's for sure.
My titties are awesome. Thank you.